Blaine Cooper is the Pulitzer Prize-winning Pentagon correspondent for the New York Times, having previously served as the White House correspondent, diplomatic correspondent, and the assistant editorial page editor. Prior to moving to the Times, Lane spent 12 years as a reporter and foreign correspondent at the Wall Street Journal. She is the author of the best-selling memoir, The House at Sugar Beach, and is the author of the new book, Madam President, which tells the harrowing and triumphant story of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, leader of the Liberian Women's Movement, winner of the Nobel Peace Prize, and the first democratically elected female president in African history. I spoke yesterday with Helene Cooper about her post at the Pentagon for the New York Times and how the last several days and weeks have been going.
It's the Pentagon feels like a little bit of an oasis right now from all of the madness that we've been having emanating out of Washington. We have a new defense secretary, Jim Mattis, who is beloved in the building. Okay, so I'm showing now just what a Pentagon creature I've become. I call it the building. And he's a former Marine, and he is very plain-spoken, and he spent a lot of time in the last 6 weeks going around the world reassuring American allies that the U.S. isn't going to do all the stuff that Donald Trump says that the U.S. is going to do. And so it's the Pentagon feels a little bit removed right now from, you know, sort of the shenanigans we're seeing coming out of the White House.
But you certainly get a sense, at least, that all of Washington is on pins and needles and has never really been able to breathe freely since Donald Trump was inaugurated. So you must even feel that in the Pentagon, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And I feel that at work at the New York Times. I mean, the Washington Bureau on election day just kicked into gear, and it's been crazy. A lot of the reporters are exhausted, and there's no end in sight. We walk around with these iPhones that show news alerts that are come in 10 times a day, and every one of them would be a huge story that would suck up the oxygen in any other year. And it's like, you know, we're writing about stuff daily that nobody thought we would ever be writing about. So there's definitely that. At the Pentagon, there is a lot of The military is weird because the American military itself leans conservative, while the civilians at the Pentagon tend to lean more liberal. But there's more calm there because the military members of the rank and file of the American military are not as instinctively afraid of a Republican president as a lot of other people, more liberal people, might be, particularly in the Northeast. So they're not coming to Trump with the kind of doubts that many other people are coming to. That said, there is some disquiet about a lot of things that he's come up with. The Muslim ban, for instance, that he first unveiled at the Pentagon, that wasn't greeted very well at all because the military works hand in hand with so many of the interpreters, fixers, other troops from a lot of these countries. And these are the people we depend on, particularly in Iraq, to help us with intelligence and all of that. And then you have Donald Trump saying at the Pentagon that they're not going to be allowed in the country. You see, Iraq has now been removed from the second Muslim ban that's come out. But it's and that was because the Pentagon lobbied so hard to remove Iraq mm-hmm. from it.
I'm curious, obviously following the election, the New York Times came out and talked about what they were going to do and the focus that they would have going forward in providing news on this administration. I'm curious as to what direction you got as a reporter and the reporters in general got at the New York Times. And also just what effect when the President of the United States points to your news organization as one of the enemies of the American people and how that affects what you do day to day.
I didn't get any specific guidance about doing anything differently from what we were doing to begin with and doing before the election. On the enemy of the people line, I think that took a lot of people by surprise. But it also, you're looking now at a commander. It took people by surprise because he carries the weight of the presidency when he says things. However, because he's been so inclined to say just about anything and to tweet just about anything, it doesn't, you know, the tweets of Donald Trump don't necessarily carry the same kind of weight as his predecessors would have done, because a lot of times people end up not taking him particularly seriously. So my life hasn't really changed as named by the president, enemy of the people. And we're told constantly at the Times to just make sure we just, you know, keep doing our jobs.
But in doing your jobs, you have to be working harder than you ever have been before.
Yeah. I mean, we are working hard. But it's the heart that makes it good, man. You know, reporters, news, we have a saying, and I'm sure you've heard it because you're in the business as well, but news cures all things. Nothing makes me happier than being really busy with a really good news story. It's, that's the whole point. That's why we're in the business.
But the New York Times takes out ads reminding people during the Oscars, and you go into the city, and it's on billboards all over the place, of the New York Times reminding people about the truth. So I'm curious as to how you see it in your job and doing your job and providing that truth to people, and what the payoff is for that in whether they realize it or not, and what you have seen as the respect for what you do as a journalist.
That part has been weird because, you know, in the media has been a sort of a scapegoat for a long time. Whenever anybody says the media, they usually mean it in a bad way. It's not necessarily a compliment coming. But I also have also thought that the New York Times is different from, you know, whatever people are talking about when they say the media. I think we all deserve a lot of criticism for times we get stuff wrong. And we should be willing to stand up behind it. But I'm pretty proud of the Times right now. I've worked for the paper since 2004, so almost 13 years now. And I've gotten angry at it plenty of times. There are times I've thought that we didn't give enough coverage to something or too much to something else. But by and large, I find myself proud that I work there. And I've never been more so than right now.
So I have to ask the question, and I guess this gets into your personality, but you are at the Pentagon now. Is there a part of you, a piece of you, that wishes you were at the back at the White House?
No way. Absolutely not.
Okay.
I've done it. Look, it was hard. I hated covering the White House back when I was doing it during Obama because you have no life. Those 4 years, I covered the first term of Obama, and I don't remember anything that happened during those 4 years. I lost friends. I lost family. I didn't lose family members, but because you're constantly on, because the president's on, and you're involved in every story because the president is involved in every story. So some of it for me became just almost, you know, you feel like you're just, it's almost, it becomes automatic and you're churning out stuff day in and day out. And I lived on the front page, but I don't remember any of the stories I did. You know, none of them jump out at me. The president did this today or he did that. Can you imagine now when you have we have reporters who are writing 3-4 stories and showing three stories on the front page on any given day. You know, in the past, you get one front page story a week and you're really happy. So while that might seem great, you're also, it's just a lot of work and you don't have time to think. And finding the time to think and to spend, you know, giving a little bit more time and thought to what you write, maybe I'm getting old, but I kind of enjoy that. I don't want to be at the White House right now.
Not putting you in a position to speak for your colleagues, but I would think you would be a part of this as well, that without that time to think, it's certainly a time where you really need to think and try to make sense of what is going on, which is a very difficult thing to do, especially when so many of us are relying on journalists like you to make sense of what's going on.
But that's where we have each other's backs.
Right.
It's you're raising a really good point, and we talk to each other. We have email listservs and chains in which, you know, just go to everybody in the Washington Bureau of the New York Times, for instance, and something happens. And if I think that, you know, we need to be looking at this, I may not be directly involved in it, but I'm going to send an email to my colleagues and vice versa saying, you know, we may want to think about stepping back and looking at this from this point of view, because in your rush, because all reporters are like this, you want to get the news out first and you want to get it as quickly and accurately as you can. And so we rely on each other to say, let's take a step back and is this happening or is this happening?
I certainly realize what you're saying as far as that idea of not wanting to be in the center of it, not wanting to be in the White House, and also the idea of that the press has often been thought of negatively by people. But you have to see that changing a little bit, and perhaps a lot, in the import of what you're doing and the necessity for what you're doing, especially when it is being dismissed by those in power.
I do. I'm constantly getting people coming up to me now saying, you guys are more important than ever before. Keep doing what you're doing. And that feels great. Speaking truth to power is something that we should be used to doing. And having people in power dismiss what we're doing or disagree with what we're doing is certainly something that we're used to doing. You know, they may, Donald Trump may do it in a different way and tweeting out that calling us the failing New York Times every time he writes something that criticizes him or doesn't make him look good is sort of at this point now he says it so often that you don't really even those words have become muted. And that's what I was talking about people not taking as seriously everything that comes out of his mouth, because he says things that so often now that the power that could come behind them sometimes seems to be gone.
It seems as though it would almost be impossible, though, to not have a certain amount and maybe I'm overthinking this, but of not having a certain amount of anger or even a rage as to a system that is. I understand that there's always been a fraught relationship between an administration and a press corps, but certainly this is at a new level, and not just with the press corps, but with so many enemies that he has named. Of where that puts you and how that affects the day-to-day job that you do, of putting that into a context that is proper.
But that's it becomes more of a challenge, but I think it's important that you don't let any anger or, you know, personal feelings that you have come into your coverage, and that's constantly a challenge. I think we're all used to being complained to and being yelled at by the White House for this or that or the other, and for previous White Houses, this is done in a slightly different way, but it's still being done. So this adversarial role is something that we should cherish. I don't want for the people I'm covering necessarily to like me. I've struggled with this even a little when I was working on this book about Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, because I really respected her as the president of Liberia, but I was coming in to write a book about her as, you know, a journalist, and I wanted to ask her the tough questions. I wanted to get her to open up to me, and that's something you kind of have to balance, because you can't just fire these tough questions at people and expect that they're then going to tell you what's in their heart, and there's a way to learn how to do that. And I think we're constantly, as journalists, evolving in learning and how to get the most out of people, particularly people that we're writing at, while sticking to the truth. And it was a challenge for me when I was working on this book. And I hope I'm able to use some of what I learned covering, you know, following the president of Liberia around in my job now at the Pentagon.
The name of the new book is Madam President, The Extraordinary Journey of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. Elaine Cooper is the Pulitzer Prize-winning Pentagon correspondent for the New York Times, having previously served as the White House correspondent. Elaine Cooper, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
This is really fun. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Elaine Cooper's new book is Madam President, The Extraordinary Journey of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.